a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Senate Education will now come to order. We'll have the Secretary please call the roll.
Senators Curd,
here.
Jensen, Jones,
here.
Rampelberg, Welke,
here.
Maher,
here.
Soholt.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. We have a quorum, and let's get about business. Welcome, everyone. We're so glad that you're at Senate Education today. And I want to extend a special hello and thank you for tuning in to anyone that might be participating on the internet and caring about the public policy process and the education in our state, which is so important. So we're really glad if you are listening in. I just wanted to have everyone double-check your cell phone and make sure that it's off. And I also would like to have our pages today introduce themselves. If you would please come to the microphone and go ahead and turn it on and tell us who you are and where you're from. And if you have some thinking about where you might be headed, we'd love to hear it.
Good morning. My name is Chelsea Bile, and I'm from Russell. And next year, I'm not sure what kind of major I'm going to go into, but for colleges, it's either USD, otherwise a Christian school up in by St. Paul.
Wonderful. Well, welcome to your capital and to being a page, and we just really appreciate your service. We have one more introduction.
Okay. Got it. Good morning. My name is Bailey Matuka. I'm from Burke. I plan on going to Mount Marty College in Yankton, and I'm going to be a pediatric nurse.
Ooh, so your chair is a nurse, so I like to hear that. So welcome to the profession in the future. We need all kinds of young, bright people to join us. And thank you for your service to all of us for the 2 weeks that you will be here. We really appreciate it. All right, committee, we would have had the minutes from January 28th before you, and I would entertain action on those minutes. Thank you, Senator Maher and Senator Jones, second. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. All right, the minutes have been approved. I want to just take a moment to make an announcement. Senator Heineman asked that I would remind you of EBSCOR's REACH Committee on Science and Technology is doing a presentation today at 3:30 in room 414. And this has to do with the governor's technology plan for South Dakota. And it's grants that are available to our kids. There's some really interesting projects that have been done. It's where we don't have to appropriate state dollars, but an interesting presentation on how we're trying to move that STEM agenda forward and that we would have collaborative partners. And people will be speaking on it on the floor of the House and the Senate today as well, but to remind people. But if you can fit that into your calendar, I think it would be really interesting to see how we have educational support within our state. All right, we're going to move forward today on our agenda. I'm going to move it just a little bit. We have guests today, and we want to hear their presentation and how our colleagues are involved with higher education commissions. But we're going to take up House Bill 1035 as somewhat of a straightforward nature. And so I would ask for proponents on House Bill 1035.
Thank you, Deborah Owen, Senior Staff Attorney for the Bureau of Human Resources. Today we're asking that you would support 1035. It is actually to reinstate a repealed statute that was repealed in 2012 as a part of a large repeal by the Bureau. It was a mistaken repeal, and it really does create the executive intern program. We did one minor change in the language from the original statute. As you know, we hire both college and tech school interns, and so we just omitted the word college from that original statutory language. And just a brief note on our intern program, we hire about 250 interns a year in 17 different agencies. The state uses this program for recruitment tool by giving real working experience to our students, and the students must have a sophomore standing to qualify for the program. And I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponents on House Bill 1035? Seeing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1035? Seeing none, I would open it up for questions of the committee. Seeing none, we'll close questions and public testimony. I would turn it over to committee discussion and or action.
Madam Chair, I move to pass on House Bill 1035.
I have a do-pass motion from Senator Maher and a second by Senator Welke for House Bill 1035. Would you like to discuss your motion? Seeing none, we will vote on House Bill 1035. All in favor say aye. All opposed, no. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Kurd.
Aye.
Jensen. Jones.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Welke.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Soholt.
Aye. It's been affirmative for House Bill 1035.
Motion consent.
It's been moved second. Consent and second consent. Motion by Senator Maher and second by Senator Jones for consent on House Bill 1035. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. House Bill 1035 has moved to consent calendar. Thank you for your efficient work, committee. People ask, I say, oh yeah, they're the best.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much. We will now move on to a presentation about the Midwest Higher Education Compact. And we have guests with us today. I would ask, please, Senator Tiedemann, who is involved, would you please introduce our guests?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. The Midwestern Higher Education Compact, we have three individuals here today, Larry Isaac, who is the president or executive director, and Pam Shute and Chris Rasmussen. But I also want to introduce Janelle Toman, who's a commissioner. We have five people that are appointed to that, and also former Senator Jeff Haberle, who served as chair of the Midwestern Higher Education Compact. And I think the presentation will give you good information as to what the benefits are of being a member of this compact and where we can do even more in the future. So thank you very much, and ask them all kinds of questions. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And former chair, Senator Haberle, thank you for being here as well. So I think we're moving ahead with Larry Isaac. Welcome.
Good morning.
We'll just make sure we've got your mic on.
Yep. Yeah, I think it is.
All right. Okay. Welcome to Senate Education.
And it's good to be here. Some of you know that I spent most of my life up until 10 years ago to that state to the north of you here. So, you know, getting back on the Dakota Plains is always a...
And Mr. Isaac, if nice. That would be North Dakota, you are more than welcome. That is also from where I came.
Really? Well, we'll have to talk. Who knows? We might be related.
You never know. It's entirely possible.
Anyway, thank you for allowing us the time. We consider it part of our responsibility to go out and visit our states and report to you on what we're doing. Seek input from a number of people in your state and the other states that are members of the compact. I'm going to try to summarize what it is we do and how states are involved in the compact's work. You have a folder in front of you. I'm going to be primarily using this document on the left-hand side of your folder. And if you'd open that to pages 2 and 3, this will give you just a little background on the compact. Some of you are familiar and some of you may not be. This compact was created in 1991, and it was an outgrowth of the Midwest Legislative Conference. So it was created, and the statutes were drafted by legislators who saw a need at that time for Midwestern states to come together and cooperate and collaborate around higher education issues. You can see the states that have all passed statutes to become a member of the compact. And that's important because this is not, you know, a voluntary organization, if you will. States have passed statutes to become members. All 12 of the states that are eligible to be members, shown in red there on the bottom of page 3, are members of the compact. There are three other regional compacts, higher education compacts in the country, in the West, in the Southeast, and the Northeast. Those compacts were created in the 1940s and 50s. This compact was created in 1991. Things were going pretty well in the Midwest for many, many years, and the need to cooperate and collaborate, it didn't seem to be as, people didn't seem to see it as really necessary. And then in 1991, like we said, the Midwest Legislative Conference drafted the statutes that created the compact. We are governed by a commission of five people from each state. according to statute, two of those have to be legislators. And so one from the House, one from the Senate. In South Dakota, one is a D, one is an R. And then there are also two commissioner alternates appointed in South Dakota, one a D and one an R. So to keep the bipartisan nature of it. Our compact, the way, and then three other people are appointed by the governor. And you can see who those are. There's a page in the back that shows you who the commissioners are in South Dakota who has participated in the last couple of years. I can just review those for you. As we said, Senator Haverly was a member and was chair of the commission that governs the compact. Deb Shepard is a commissioner who is from Lake Area Technical Institute. Of course, Senator Tiedemann. Janelle Toman, who is here, Tony Van Huysen from the governor's office, and Representative Susan Wismer, and then the alternates are Representative Dryden and Senator Lucas. But this compact is different than the others in how it is governed in that we have such heavy legislative involvement. 40% of our commissioners are legislators. And quite frankly, we really like it that way. It's what attracted me to the position 10 years ago. Because there is this real mingling, if you will, of higher education leadership, government leadership, and legislative involvement. And that, I think, makes for some pretty rich discussions and decisions about what we do. You can see who the officers are this year. Senator Harsdorf from Wisconsin, she's chair of the Higher Education Committee in Wisconsin, is the chair. The chair rotates each year between a legislator and a non-legislator. As I said, our overall mission is to advance cooperation and collaboration in higher education. Both public and private nonprofit institutions can take advantage of our services that we provide. Over the years, our services have really fallen into, if you will, three buckets. One of those is what we call cost savings and cost containment, which are explained on pages 4 and 5. Early on, our commission said one of the things we want this compact to focus on is where can we do things to share resources, really leverage, if you will, the capacity of a 12-state region to drive down costs in certain areas. I think that was a very wise decision of the commission back in 1991 to do that. That has developed as a very unique niche for this compact. We have been able to provide some very important services, and let me just give you a quick rundown of some of those. Those programs have are saving about $33 million a year in the states. One of the largest programs that we have is a property insurance program that now insures $88 billion. You may have heard about this in South Dakota. MEC has been asked to provide a quote a couple of times. Our program is just for higher education. But even though the state of South Dakota chose to continue to maintain their property insurance for state government and higher education in one policy, the fact that we came to the table 1 year saved the Board of Regents institutions between $80,000 and $90,000, and last year $240,000. The premium, when you take a program of $88 billion to the market, you can leverage a little bit in that marketplace. And so even though the South Dakota decided to do what they did, just the fact that we were at the table, and we found this in some other states and at other institutions as well. All of a sudden, the current carriers decide to sharpen their pencil quite a bit. And so that is a program that has just been tremendously successful. It saved institutions in the Midwest between $10 and $13 million last year. And or $10 million in the Midwest alone. It's been so successful that the other regional compacts have come to us and asked it if we'd offer it in their regions. And we said we would do that for a bit of a price, and we won't insure a California earthquake or southeast wind or northeast wind. We turned Yale down, so you can see we look for good members. We also have a number of technology initiatives in this area that institutions are using, a number of hardware and software contracts, and we try to be very selective in what we get into here where we can drive down costs. South Dakota's used our Oracle contract heavily over the years. This is also open to state and local governments. There's a list of people who have purchased off these contracts in the back of the right-hand side of your folder. You'll see several school districts on there. They can also use many of our technology initiatives. We try to really, again, drive down costs for things. And I'll give you a quick example. How many of you have heard of Adobe? You've all got Adobe on your laptop, probably, right? It's called a creative software kind of thing. Well, Adobe really has a grip on the marketplace, and especially in higher education. A year ago, Adobe said, we're going to change our pricing structure to put it on an FTE basis, which really drove up the price of that and the cost. Our technology committee, of which three South Dakota people serve on, decided this is too tough to take, and we went out in the marketplace and found another carrier, and we're taking on Goliath, if you will, and we just announced a contract with a company called Corel, who's a competitor to Adobe, and we'll see where it goes, but we think it's going to be a game changer in that marketplace. That gives you an example of the things we try to do. We have a student health insurance program that just rolled out 2-3 years ago. Kansas and North Dakota participate heavily in that. South Dakota looked at it, but I think, again, the fact that it was in the mix for a quote also helped there. Student health insurance is really important, even in this day of ACA, because the ACA exempts student health insurance plans. And that's a good thing, because that pool, if you put them into the big pool, the students' prices are going to go up significantly. They get a little lower rate than I do. You can see the savings on page 6 and 7. Again, South Dakota is our newest member in the compact. Last year, your savings were about a little over $300,000. Each state pays $95,000. Some say, well, why everybody the same? That's the way the compact decided it would be. Plus, all travel expenses and all of the expenses for commissioners are paid here out of this. Some states it's more expensive to travel, some states it's less expensive to travel from, and, you know, so it all evens out in the end. You get an array of services, basically, for the price of one FTE, is the way I put it, is what it really equates to. We have a student access program. A lot is going on in there. 9 states participate in that. We have a number of different things I won't go into in there, like electronic transcripts initiatives that states use and so forth. Our final area is in the area of policy research and analysis. About 9 years ago, our commission said we want the commission to engage and the staff to engage in research and policy analysis that can help policymakers, higher education leaders, and others on policy issues related to higher education. You have a report here. I'm not going to go through this, but I'll reference a few things. A very in-depth report on a number of policy indicators. Take 10 minutes is all it'll do to page through it sometime. It really, we've upgraded this year. I can tell you, when I was chancellor of the university system in North Dakota, I wish I would have had something like this. This is good stuff. I don't do it. My staff does it, so I give them all the credit. People like Chris Rasmussen. There is really good information in here. But let me just highlight some of those for you on pages 14 and 15 of the small white document. And you can see what we have done this year is we've put a green light, a yellow light, and a red light by different indicators to show where we see the state in relationship to some aspirational scores that we defined, all right? We tried to be modest and moderate about the aspirational scores, but yet push, if you will, on some issues. South Dakota and, you know, the Plain States always do pretty good in enrollment of students right out of college. Always doing pretty good. Both in completion and in enrollment, there's a gap, achievement gap. Every state will likely get a red in this area, which means that it has a high need for improvement. This is not unique to South Dakota. It's a national issue. And I'm sure you know that and hear about it from time to time here as well. We know you do. You do a pretty good job with degree completion, the students who enroll, and your system is fairly efficient when we look at it and compare it. Academic preparation, there's always moderate need for improvement in that area, and that will continue to be an area when you look at ACT and SAT scores and other indicators. That's an area that continues to need some attention. Affordability, you know, people say, well, how affordable is college? And let me say, your tuition rates for your public institutions are not bad. I mean, they're not out of line. But the way we measure this score is how much of out of your pocketbook does it take to pay for college? And, you know, because that's based upon income of the population. It's based upon how much financial aid is available to students. And in South Dakota, we see a high need for improvement in that area. We see that in a number of our states, probably more so than what it was 10 years ago, because the costs have increased. And as you know, people's incomes have not kept up with that. States have had, most states, except my former state, have had trouble finding the money. You know, that's not a pointing a finger. It just happened. And there wasn't enough money to go around. And so tuition took the brunt. So many states now have hit this red light category. And you can see other areas in there. We do a number of things in this policy area. This is just one of them. We have an annual policy summit. Last year, we tried to do it on issues of the day. We did it on a number of things and so forth. But I'm not going to keep going on here. You've got a busy day ahead of you, but I'd be glad to answer any questions for you.
Thank you so much for that summary, Mr. Isaac. Are there questions by committee members?
You know, one of the things I would say to you, if you ever need research on a topic or subject, you have a great staff here. I used to be a member of a legislative staff. That's how I cut my teeth in government 40 years ago next month. But if there are things, and for the staff, if you have things that you'd like us to take a look at, we have a number of tools to do that. We'd be glad to help you. That's just part of our service.
Any questions or thoughts? I would just like to make a comment.
Yeah.
You know, I thought your interesting point at the beginning about the need to cooperate and collaborate. And I just think that, you know, in our old world, if you will, we had the opportunity to be more in isolation. But when you start looking at complex problems and how we're becoming so interconnected, it's really requiring new methodologies and new groups to come together.
Yeah.
And I think that this is an example of how those groups where you're bringing in content experts and policy experts and people that are actually legislating, and that it's a way to really start moving some very meaningful things forward.
Yeah.
So I would really applaud
your
work.
Thank you. And, you know, I come from a small state, too. And
yes, we do.
And yeah, we do. Yeah. And in these small states, you don't have tons of staff. You know, legislators where they have full-time staff working for them, and we have some in our states. You don't have a full-time staff. These kinds of organizations, not just MEC, but NCSL and so forth, they can provide resources to you that you don't have to help you. And I think that that's important, especially in small states that don't have tons of staff to help them. Let me finish with a story. The roots of this compact are really in South Dakota. In this building. In the late 70s, the Midwest Legislative Conference took a look at creating this compact, and they drafted a statute to do so. And it was spearheaded and led by a former senator here in South Dakota, and the name escapes me, and I didn't write it down. Anybody remember? Yes, Senator Schreier, right? Yeah, Senator Harold Schreier was actually the person who first spearheaded the effort to create this compact. And then it was created in 1991. So I'll end with that. Thank you.
Senator Rampelberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As long as we've got a little bit of time, I just had a couple of comments and a question for you. Jeff, have we had this presentation before? Have we? I don't recall it. Anyway, has it come before this committee? I'm getting older. Well, I'm reflective, Mr. Isaac, yeah. of what happened about 3 years ago when we were going through a real tough time here. And I know we were looking at cutting a bunch of stuff. And as I recall, this is one thing that was on the chopping block. Isn't that right, Jeff? Yeah. And Jeff, he was on appropriations, so he was between a rock and a hard spot. But I really appreciate you coming down and explaining this, because I'm a numbers guy, a retired banker, and I've spent a lot of years in North Dakota.
I'm a CPA, so.
Right? Yeah, you know all about it. Yeah. We have a kindred soul. But anyway, I just want to thank you for the presentation today. It really it resonates very well with me when I see what our money is doing. And I understand the nature of collaboration, and I just applaud what you folks are
doing. Thank you.
Please keep us posted.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if any time you're dealing with an issue or you would like this presentation about how South Dakota is doing, for us to get into more depth with any group, and I've offered this, I've presented to the Board of Regents and others, we'll come back and do that. It's free. You don't have to pay a thing, so it's free consulting.
So Senator Welke.
Yeah, thank you very much for this. I'm looking at a couple of things. One, on page 15, where it says policies for improving educational quality, and we have a red there. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, do you have, when you do something like that, do you have suggestions and things that should be looking at?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to find it here in the larger book, the red book. If you look at page 60. Yeah, pages 59 and 60, okay? We don't develop any of the data ourselves. We use data that other people have already created and so forth. But, for example, on page 60, we've defined a number of policies, and those come from the, National Teacher Standards Board and so forth, a number of different places. And you can see there, for those kinds of policies, whether South Dakota is in or not, and then the number of states that are in or not in each one of those. And that's where that is derived from, because there are a number of those where South Dakota has not taken those measures. I'm not saying they're exactly the right measures or the wrong measures. It's a barometer. Yeah. But that's what it's based on.
And I think those are very good to look at, and I think we could look at them and maybe make some improvements. The other question I had for you was, you said that public schools, high schools, could take advantage of purchasing through this. Melody would know better, but I'm just curious how our South Dakota schools know that. Are they being informed of how they could take advantage of that?
Well, we try to get the word out as much as we can, and it's our technology contracts. Many of those, not all, but many of those are open to school districts and local governments. Many times it depends on the vendor. If it's a Dell, we know if it's a Dell purchase, for example, they're purchasing hardware software from Dell, that vendor has to do it. We try to get the word out, and I can tell you that within 2 weeks, we're hiring somebody who's going to focus more on marketing and development. We're a small staff. We rely on the people in the states. We have hundreds of people in the states who are on committees, you know, guiding programs, developing, saying what we need. We haven't been able to do as good a job as we would like to in getting the word out. That's a challenge for us. We're going to try and address that a little more directly in the future. And certainly, if you can spread the word, that would be great, too. We don't get involved in the transaction at all. Contracts there, entities can use them. And we're out of it. Yeah.
Go ahead, Senator Welke.
Well, Senator Tiedemann, when he started, said he was involved. And it sounds like you're committed. You've heard the story about breakfast and being involved or committed. of the chicken is involved, but the pig is committed. So yeah. hopefully we're committed to doing something to improve education in South Dakota. And I think these guides seem like a pretty good thing to look at.
Yeah.
Senator Rampelberg.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. When you start talking about effective teaching, I'm wondering, has the organization taken a good hard look at Common Core standards, and have you assumed a position on that?
I understand that was a topic of the day here.
Speaking of commitment.
It's not over.
Have we taken a hard look at it and everything? I don't know what that would involve, really. But I was asked this at our dinner last night that we had with some of you and others, the same question. And here's what I said, and this isn't dodging the issue. You can call it Common Core, you can call it whatever you want. Our data shows that academic preparation for college and work is in need of improvement. I mean, that's the yellow here. I mean, that's the issue. You can call solutions to the issue whatever you want, all right? That's the issue. We need to improve academic preparation of people in high school. And if you look at the data in here, 70% of students who take the ACT exam are not proficient in one of the four areas. If you look at the NAEP data, National Association of Educational, whatever it is. If you look at that data, same story. So we know that we need improvement. And our K-12 partners acknowledge that. They don't run away from that. And it's not about higher ed pointing the fingers and so forth. So, call it what you want. We need improvement. And if Common Core standards, which were started by the governors, it was actually the states taking control of an issue early. The way I see it, the states took control of that issue and said, we want to try and make improvements. A lot of things have happened in the meantime that, for whatever reason, the perception is that this is a D.C.-driven agenda when it was the states that took control of the issue. And I happen to, having worked in state government and with this organization, happen to believe that states should take control of issues like this. So call it what you want. It's an effort to improve academic preparation, and that's good.
Yeah. Senator Wilkie.
I was going to say something about that and bring that up, but I decided to avoid that. But thank you, Senator. But one of the things I wanted to say was this is a great example of working together, a cooperative organization, so that we can find ways to improve education. And that's, in my mind, what the governors did when they created Common Core, is that they worked together and they created a plan so that we could improve some of the things that we're deficit at. And so cooperation is a good thing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, some people think that means we're letting the federal government take over or whatever. But this, should be a good thing for us to move forward with.
Further comment or any questions by the senators? Seeing none, I just want to thank you very much and your colleagues and for traveling and taking time out to be with us and for all of your good work on behalf of all of us. And as you pointed out, our resources are slim in support, and we really appreciate that extended offer that can help us with, research that is valid and, understanding the situation from a trending perspective. That's very helpful to all of us. So thank you for your fine work and for being in South Dakota today.
Thank you very much. And you'll have to tell me where you're from in North Dakota sometime.
Offline.
Yeah. All
right. Not that it's a secret. is there any further business that any senator would like to bring before this committee? All right. So before you think that we're kind of a light committee, we do have a full docket of bills that's starting to line up. Things are heating up, so our next meeting will be on Tuesday, February 4th. We will begin at 7:45 next Tuesday. Seeing no further business, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Senator Rampelberg has moved adjournment, and a second by Senator Jones. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carried. We are adjourned. Have a great day, senators.